Russ, welcome back from vacation. I love the Hawaiian shirt. I love the very deep tan. And you've handed me a card here that says I'm supposed to refer to you only as D.A. Wildman. Mm-hmm. Sorry, the Wild Man. What happened to you?
You know, I sort of found myself in the wilds of America. There's a song by Paul Simon called America. And I basically...
Call me out.
Yes. You call me. I basically, rode around on a bus and just experienced the world. And
how is it out there?
Yeah, how's it going?
You know, it might surprise you, but things are not great. That being said, I had a lot of fun. I have...
What people can't see is Russ was shaking as he was describing this, trying to remember his vacation until he slowly just collapsed.
Yeah.
Russ should hitchhike across America so he could set a record for getting mugged. Like, he will have, imagine Russ just like thumbing his way across America. He'll come back. He'll have seen every nondescript ditch in this great country of ours as he's repeatedly mugged. The most muggable man in America, Russ Freshstein.
Sorry, did you say huggable?
Oh.
No. Sorry, it broke up. Muggable because of his frame. Very muggable. You look at me. That's dead weight. You don't want that. He's going to lie in the ground like a toddler. He's not going anywhere. Russ, you put him in your trunk. What do you got?
I think Russ could really whip my ass. In physical combat, are you hearing this, Russ?
I thought you were going to qualify it.
Nah, man. No qualifiers necessary.
Wow.
I think you got reach. Let's do a combat ranking of the podcast.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. I am below Russ. That's all I know. That's all I know. Chris and Justin, y'all slot in wherever y'all want, but I am below Russ for sure.
I do kicks. I do kicks, so it's worth factoring that in when we're ranking.
Spindly kicking legs. We're fucked, guys. I think Russ is on top.
I know what I said earlier, but Russ has the incredible power of child-free sleep. And I have not experienced that for so many years that I've atrophied. I don't feel like I can experience that level of the level of joy and contentment Russ has in his life.
I am basically a member of the Justice League compared to you guys at this point.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I know the best game of the year.
My name is Russ Freshick, and I know the best game of the week.
Hello, and welcome to the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in home computer entertainment. I thought we were going to talk about Spelunky 2, but judging from Chris Plant's intro, we're talking about Griftlands, finally.
Oh, no.
The episode everybody's been waiting for. No, we're talking about Spelunky 2. Follow-up to Spelunky 1 that came out 17 years ago on vinyl, and now Spelunky 2 is here.
You know those punch cards they use to send someone to space? That's what they program Spelunky 1 on.
Right.
Here's a summary. Spelunky 2 is a roguelike, which you're basically Indiana Jones, and you are going through a 2D environment of caves, moving ever downwards, using bombs and ropes and jetpacks and anything else that you can find to eventually reach the end. An incredibly simple game until you actually start playing it, and you die and you die and you die, and you discover that it is filled with secrets, which we are not going to spoil too many of after the break.
Spelunky 2.
Let's be perfectly frank. The thing I think most of us are interested...
Let me be frank.
Let's not ever conjure that particular specter again. Justin has been such a detractor of the entire sort of Spelunky franchise.
I don't think that's fair.
I think it's incredible.
I feel like I've always been very honest about the fact that it is my own personal taste. not a fault of Spelunky.
Sure.
What did you call it last? Did you say Spelunky? You see, you had some very charming way of. Anyway, you've had a very recent sort of reversal of your a change of heart, a Grinch like in beginning of your heart with regards to Spelunky 2. And I am very excited to hear how that came to pass.
Maybe this is a useful jumping off point. I don't know. I knew that we were going to talk about it on this episode, and I thought, well, the energy of me just being like, I don't get it, won't be very fun. So I thought, okay, I have a week. I'm just going to sit down and like try to force myself into liking this game. Because I'm someone who, okay, as someone who, as a quote-unquote true gamer, my gaming persona is I like to be progressing. I like a narrative being told to me. I like to be progressing and feel like I'm advancing in whatever I'm doing. And the problem, the thing that I had with Spelunky, the problem that I had was I didn't feel like I was making any progress. It just felt like I was spinning my wheels constantly. Mm-hmm. And even when I would get a little bit farther than normal, I felt like I'm just, you know, I it was luck, whatever. I'm not actually progressing because then I'd be back to the beginning. And what I decided to do was, and this was really the change of heart that I had that kind of unlocked the series for me and unlocked my enjoyment of it. You die a lot in Spelunky 2. There's times when you die almost instantly. I mean, literally, not a joke. Sometimes the first thing you jump off of, there'll be a spike trap there. You jump off, the spike hits you. That's half your life. You might as well restart.
I had a 4-second run in Spelunky. I looked at the clock. It was amazing. I jumped down. I got punched by one of those fists and landed in a pit of spikes. 4 seconds. It was amazing.
The way I changed my brain that actually unlocked this series for me is I made the decision to stop giving a shit about how far I made it in the game. I stopped caring about how far I progressed, and I instead, my kid is in virtual school, and she's in the same room, you know, with me. So when she would get off of class and have a break, she would sometimes come and sit and watch me play, and we just started like, I decided one, I was just going to have fun and enjoy it every time, and I was going to treat it always as a learning exercise more than a progression exercise. I stopped caring about what I was progressing and started thinking more about what I was learning, right? And when I did that, all of a sudden, I was advancing with every run because I was thinking about like, okay, well, I died almost instantly that time, but I did learn that if, I'll give like a bizarre example, like if I throw an arrow and it hits somebody and then falls back down to the ground, it hits me and I could die. So that's something I need to be careful of.
Yeah.
Or even something simple like those spike traps, they leave their arrows behind and I'll pick up the arrow that it dropped and I can use that as a weapon. Or to make it even, like I used to get really hung up on items. There's items in the levels where you're collecting gold as you go. You get the gold and you can use that to buy items. That always was such a freezing point for me in previous Spelunky games or the previous Spelunky because I was like, I don't know what, I don't know how to min-max this. Yeah. I don't know what's going to give me the best results. I don't know what the most powerful thing is. I don't know what, but when I switched to, well, I don't know. I haven't used that. I'm going to pick that up and see what it does. And when I made that flip, all of a sudden it really became a lot more pleasurable because then it was not like, oh man, I had 10,000 gold and I was doing really well and then I wasted it on this pitcher's mitt that didn't help me get any farther.
The teleport.
There's almost no such thing as like a quote great run in Spelunky, which is to say like as you get very, very, very good, you might like end up with like a shitload of items, but that happens like dozens and dozens and dozens of hours in. Every run before that, you might feel like you're having a great run, but in truth, every single run can end in a split second. So you shouldn't feel like, oh, I was unlucky. I would have made it had I, you know, been a little bit luckier. You wouldn't have. You would have died. But what you did learn, to Justin's point, was every single item that you got and, you know, oh, I know that sticky bombs are super useful for taking out the giant spiders, for example. like that stuff carries over. There's your progression, and the progression is invisible because it's your fucking brain. I just as an interesting like side note to that. So Plant and I were playing the on PC, which is coming out in a couple weeks, but we were playing like an early build before launch, and halfway through that, I found out that there was an updated build, and the devs told me, hey, just a heads up, if you update this build, it'll wipe all your save progress. And I did it. Like, I had like a dozen hours into the game, and I did it because it did not matter, because I was immediately able to get back to the point that I was just before, even with no save progress whatsoever, because you cannot wipe my brain. It's amazing.
That's the cool effect. And the when I really started to like get into a groove with it, is it gave me that feeling of, as you learn these things and you do them enough times, eventually it gets filed into like subroutines of my brain that aren't conscious anymore. Mm-hmm. And then it's very cool because it starts to feel like the reference point I always have in popular culture is the bit in Princess Bride after they've learned how to navigate the fire swamp and they understand if they hear a popping noise. Like, and they're just easily manage their way through it. Dark Souls does this too.
Right.
You play a section enough times, eventually you're like, okay, stab that guy, turn around, kill that person. And Spelunky got to that point where I wasn't thinking, oh, there might be a spike trap around there. I was just in my periphery, like keeping an eye out and thinking about it and not really consciously looking out for it, to where that stuff didn't like get me as much. Cause I knew, I mean, I had forced myself into learning this stuff.
Yeah. So this is a tip for people who are playing for the first time. And I honestly, I played Spelunky for so long that I ignored it until I reinstalled the game again last night, doing similar to like what Fresh just said. So I had to replay through the beginning of the game. And what happens your first time through is anytime you kill a new enemy or pick up literally any object, a little notebook appears letting you know it's been filed to the notebook and like what the object is. And that cue, I think, is a good moment if you're playing for the first time to like take a breath and be like, okay, what did I actually just learn from that? The instinct is to just, you know, blast through and just pick up a whole bunch of objects. And, you know, you pick up a rock and you think, well, it's a rock. Like, I guess I use it to hit people. Obviously, a rock can do a lot more in this game than just hit people. It can set off, it can trigger traps, it can do a variety of things. And I think that I found really useful, because I made that mistake, honestly, going through Spelunky 2 the first time. I talked to Fresh about this while I was doing my review, is you assume, because you were good at Spelunky 1, that you understand Spelunky 2. And the reality is you do not. You have to relearn a whole lot of things. I mean, reading is the perfect metaphor for this game. That is what you are doing. You're learning to read the screen very quickly. Right. Mm-hmm. And if you do not take the time to actually learn to read and continue to play it as if it were like Mario, you'll hate the game. I mean, it will punish you.
That's a really important distinction. The other thing that unlocked this for me is my main biggest thing that I couldn't get past the first time I played Spelunky is it feels really bad to whip and jump with your whip and whip at stuff. It just doesn't, for me, whatever it is, it just didn't feel right. Every time that I would like see a bat coming at me, I would jump at the bat and try to whip him, and then I would get hit almost every time. Mm-hmm. Right. The thing that I changed on this is like on this run that finally helped me with that is I stopped thinking about it as an action game or a platformer even, and started to think about whip as like part of a puzzle vocabulary versus my main tool for navigating this environment, right?
Yeah.
If I'm ready for the bat when he's, if I navigate myself to a point where the bat only has one course and that's to fly straight at me, then I'm going to whip him every time. If I'm flying at him and jumping at him, there's a very good chance I could get the timing wrong because that's not, like I haven't set up perfectly for that encounter, right?
Right.
Like, and that is the thing. You can't just charge your way through and whip at everything that comes at you. It's got to be more deliberate.
I feel like we have talked a lot about what makes Spelunky tick, and I think that all of those things are better in Spelunky 2 even than they were in Spelunky 1. And Spelunky 1 is like, you know, pretty close to a perfect game in like what it did, all of these things that we're talking about. It was so like single-mindedly focused on achieving those really very rare sort of game design ideas. And it did all of those things, like, just as it wanted to do it, which is a very, very difficult thing for video games to do. And Spelunky 2 is a lot more ambitious. Mm-hmm. And frankly, just, like, a lot more feature-rich. It's bigger in terms of, like, levels, and it is a lot more sort of, it's not uniform necessarily the way that the levels work. There are, again, like, we don't want to spoil everything because the joy of this game is discovering things, but there's, like, branching paths as you explore mm-hmm. through the world, and some, you know, it goes through that Mario, Super Mario Brothers, like, level numbering system of, like, 1-1, 1-2, 1-3, 1-4, but then, like, you'll reach an area that's not that is not four stages in a row, and you kind of have to, like, learn where that slots into your run. It has fluid dynamics, and that's a very, very important system for certain levels, where the fluid, if you touch it, you die instantly, which is probably the wildest thing about Spelunky 2, and maybe the thing that I'm not clicking with is that adds a kind of, having a fluid physics system in the game kind of betrays the
precision,
having this element of it's chaotic, and an inherently not chaotic, I mean, it's chaotic in that, like, a bunch of shit can go wrong very fast, but it follows a system of rules that are learnable and dependable, and having, like, you know, a blob of lava fall on you because it happened to roll off a certain surface some way is like, oh shit, okay.
So I want to talk about that specifically, because that's, like, I think really ties into the core of Spelunky is a lot, you know, you're talking about lava specifically, like, lava was in the last game, but here it will, like, ooze around corners, and, like, if you blow up the floor of a bunch of lava, it'll obviously fall and pool in different places. And that is kind of the epitome of, like, Spelunky stuff, where, like, sure, absolutely, occasionally you will die and there was nothing you could have done to stop it. But I would say that's, like, one in maybe 30 times. The other times, the way I play, like, through lava levels now, I'll see it and I'll be like, oh, I treat that the same way I would, like, a spike pit or, you know, a difficult enemy, where I know, like, hey, if something blows up near there, God knows what's going to happen below that lava when it falls, but it's not going to be good. So I got to avoid that whatever possible. And there are times when it happens and there's nothing I can do to stop it. And then you just have to maneuver around that. And again, that is Spelunky, is, like, dealing with situations as they're presented to you.
Yeah, the way I had a similar beef with the lava at the beginning, I've come to appreciate it. It makes you think about what's above you versus what's below you. And I think that is, like, the big change that it brings to Spelunky. I think usually in Spelunky it's, okay, I'm working my way down. I need to constantly be seeing what's underneath me. I need to prepare for it. Where the lava levels, if a bomb goes off, or there's a shortcut that you can trigger that can really cause some mayhem with lava, you're going to have to live with that. And the shortcut, for example, I quickly realized, like, that's just not my goal for these runs. Like, I'm not going to set that thing off because, like, that is so far more advanced than, it's not a shortcut, it's an extension. It's so far more advanced than, like, what my goal is. And I think that is the other thing that you have to remember. And I think, it gets to what you were talking about, Justin, of, like, having a purpose when you play this game. Mm-hmm. Going into each run and saying, like, this is my goal. My goal is that I'm going to figure out what this one secret thing does. Or my goal is I'm going to try to get a shotgun and a jetpack, and I'm going to try to get to the end of the main version of the game. There are multiple endings. I think when I start playing like that is when I enjoy the game the most. But when I try to, like, make every run into a little bit of everything is when I end up, like, dying in some embarrassing way because I was just trying to do too much.
It does have shortcuts, which is, like, the returning system of like the through line progression of if you reach certain points in the game, there will be a character who, after you meet them a certain number of times and give them a certain number of things, they will open up a shortcut so that you can jump right to that point in a run, which is, I am very grateful that that is in there, because while I agree with everything you're saying about treating each run as educational rather than, like, a progression, like, thing, I think that is true to a certain point, but I also feel like I have reached points where I'm like, okay, I know a fucking lot about this. I would love to see what the next level looks like.
But that's not a contradictory to what I was saying, because by the time I unlocked that shortcut, I felt like I had learned all the learning that I needed to do in that era. Like, I got it. Like, yeah. I knew what all the different things did. It's just a question of, like, did I execute well?
Also, the shortcuts aren't like things in so many roguelikes where it's like, well, now that I've got the shortcut, I can beat the game using this. The shortcuts are just for training. You do the shortcuts to train up in certain areas, and then when you're ready to do, like, a real run, you go back to the beginning and play from the beginning. Because you need
one thing
every...
I didn't love about the shortcut, the first one that I unlocked was at 1-4. Which is like, you know, the end of the first world. Everybody starts in the same first world. It's like a mine type deal. Mm-hmm. There is at the point that you shortcut to, there is a door to a second world, and there's also a box that has a friend in it.
A friend in quotation marks.
a partner, right? Yeah, and I got the friend every time, and it just was annoying to have to, like, go get them and then take them to the door or not. But I guess it's because some people don't want to take
the friend. Yeah, no, definitely not. The friends are terrible.
they're AI.
I found it helpful because it kept me from focusing too much on how I was doing.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, it really forced my hand on the whole educational aspect of it, because, like, it gave me another opportunity to watch someone do something different.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, you could learn something from that. There's a different enemy behavior or things like that.
Speaking of terrible friends, I would be remiss if we did not talk about the multiplayer in this game. It has online multiplayer, which was not in the first Spelunky, which we have not, I have not messed around with, but I have messed around with, what's it called, Russ? Steam?
It's like Steam remote play. Like couch play. I forget what the term is on Steam.
Essentially, it allows another Steam user to simulate local co-op,
right?
With you.
So I dialed into Griffin's computer and played on his screen. Now, it should be worth noting, when the game comes out on Steam on September 29th, online multiplayer will be in there in theory. So most people will not experience the game using the Steam remote play. They'll just use online multiplayer.
Yeah,
but
I don't know how. I've not heard how the online multiplayer natively
works on PS4. I've heard
there's
still some
PS4.
Bugs to work
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I have too. That the net code, from what I understand, is like the kind of the biggest last piece of the puzzle. But all that said, because we were playing sort of in simulated co-op, we had to share one screen, which is how it works if you play local co-op in Spelunky. And I'm sure this is true for the online multiplayer too. It is a level of slapstick comedy that I have not seen in a video game maybe ever.
Yeah.
It is... The number of accidental Rube Goldberg things that can happen and completely mess you up is exponentially increased with each additional human being that you throw into the mix. And that's amazing, right? Like, I will be teetering on an edge and accidentally drop the boomerang I was holding, which will fall into Russ and knock him into a pit where there's just, like, two cavemen bouncing around who will just play volleyball with his dead-ass body. And all of that started because, like, I was accidentally standing too close to a ledge. That's very funny. There is also opportunities for trolling, the likes of which I have not seen since, like, the witch in Left 4 Dead, which was always my favorite thing when I would, like, play Left 4 Dead with all the joystick buddies, is, like, they would be like, Griffin, please, God, don't anger the witch, who was just this monster that if you got too close to her or shot her, she would freak out and kill everybody. I'd be like, I won't. Bah, 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 bah. This game has so many ways to do that, and it's absolutely hysterical. There's a jar that if you wait too long in a level, a ghost comes and will slowly hover towards you, and if he touches you, he kills you. There's also a jar with an expensive diamond in it, but if you smash that jar to get the diamond out, you summon the ghost right away. And it's very fun to do that with Russ, who just begins begging you, please, God, don't touch that jar. Please don't get that jar. And I'm like, but the money is so good. The money's in the jar. We need the money.
If you treat those experiences as, like, not for, I you know, to Justin's point, not for progress, but just for, like, fun hangout, you will have such a fucking blast. It really is tremendous. And I think that's really the best way to experience it with someone else. It also, for what it's worth, gives you some padding, because like a death isn't necessarily a death. If someone if your buddy dies, they turn into a ghost and can float around the screen helping you by like blowing wind at items and knocking them off shelves and even freezing enemies. Now they like really buff the ghosts. So it actually is somewhat of an easier game if you are like super coordinated, which most people aren't.
It's much easier. By far the farthest I've gotten in this game has been playing with Russ, because you can also revive your ghosts. If you find like one of those coffins that have the buddies in them, it's your co-op partner, and they revive with like full health, and it's you can just sort of chain those together. I've really enjoyed Spelunky 2. I am like really having trouble making a lot of progress in it, but I find the multiplayer to be like, it's by far, it's like defining selling point.
Yeah, it is
absolutely fucking delightful. It is so good. And I'm so glad that more people are going to get to do it with the online stuff that's in there now.
I do want to say one more thing. At this point, I looked the other day. I'm at 65 hours logged in Steam. I have played so much of this fucking game. Literally last night, I reached an area that I have never been to before, never seen before, totally brand new to me. Not like a final area, like an area that's like in the middle, like somewhere that I've like walked past 10,000 times at this point, never noticed it, didn't know how to get there, finally reached it, and it was a fucking incredible moment. And the fact that that's still happening 65 hours in is outrageous. Like, that is amazing, and there's still more to do. Like, there's still a ton that, like, the internet has had this game for a week and still has not really beaten it.
Fresh sent me a video from this area, and I won't say any specifics of what happens in it, other than looking at the video, so much was going on that I did not understand that it might as well have been a different game. It's just deeply confusing.
It's secretly Frog Fractions.
We are going to be talking about a lot more, including the console wars finally beginning in earnest. A lot of Sony cronies and Xbox going head to head. But first, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
How fucking hard is it to put up a website where it's like, click here to buy the Xbox. Click here, buy PlayStation 5. It'll be there in November. Click it.
Amazon has been making like online store pages for quite some time. I want to say 20 years.
But you don't do that. Now it's like, hey, Griffin, it's your old buddy Bezos. And you want that PS5? Click here. Click here. It's a picture of a puppy dog. And the puppy dog's like, oops, we fucked up. Just make the website where you click the thing and you can buy the thing that'll be at your house in 2 months that you don't need. It's fucking easy.
It was a wild week as both the pre-orders went live for PlayStation 5, which happened first, and Xbox. PlayStation 5 was kind of a mess because it was announced on, tell me if I have this timing right, but it was basically announced on
Tuesday,
memory serves, Tuesday, that on Thursday, the pre-orders would, it was announced on Tuesday that pre-orders would happen Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Tuesday night, pre-orders just popped off everywhere.
I think Walmart broke the dam, because Walmart literally tweeted like, are we gonna wait? Fuck nah, fam. Come get your PS5. Like, literally tweeted that. Like, are we gonna wait for what we agreed on with the manufacturer? Fuck that. We're Walmart, baby. Rebel Edge. And then, like, everybody else was like, oh, well, if Walmart's doing it.
Right. And then they did it in sort of a staggered form. We had the Xbox. I completely missed that mess. So maybe somebody who was more plugged in can explain how that went down.
Yeah. So Xbox was a little bit better insofar as before it happened, Microsoft, like several days before it happened, Microsoft was like, hey, pre-orders are going to go live on, September 22nd at 11 a.m. Eastern time. It's going to be available here, here, and here, and here. And so just be ready. So that's great. That's a good start. 11 a.m. came round, and sites basically started shitting the bed pretty hardcore. I was able to get into Microsoft.com, home of the Xbox, And after 10 minutes of failing pages on Microsoft.com, I was actually able to pre-order an Xbox Series X, even though I am not sure why I did it, but I did it. And but in terms of the other websites, basically the same situation happened, which was just like an enormous amount of traffic came flooding into these websites, and websites that theoretically should be able to handle this sort of mess definitely did not. And it was just kind of a shit show. Yeah,
that was the thing. All the sites being crappy is a very, I mean, like there is a, that was a consistent theme over both of these launches of like stuff just not. I tried it on Best Buy, and on Best Buy I was able to like get the item, the PlayStation 5, into my cart, and then just reloaded the cart, and it's like I don't know what's happening right now, and it would just crash the page or whatever. So that, and it seems like that's kind of the immutable, right? So this is a problem that you're not going to see someone build the this, I'm completely not in this business. I'm basing this on like when we've done like ticket sales or whatever, where a lot of people are going to try to do the same thing at the exact same moment. You're not going to see these sites build the kind of infrastructure that can withstand this sort of demand, because it is so rare, right, that they would need to fill this sort of demand.
They should figure it out, because, you know, right, Apple figured it out. And don't, right, be surprised if we see video game console releases every other year. You know,
if you're Apple, though, you figured you're just, people are coming to you to get the thing, right?
Well, and AT&T and every wireless provider. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, also, I wanted to answer a question that Fresh threw out there. Why did you buy an Xbox Series X? Because this week, Microsoft also went and bought Bethesda.
Just, oh, yeah, fucking bought Bethany Esther. Just, yeah.
It was like,
we didn't talk. We also didn't talk about the fucking PlayStation 5 event, which happened, I think, the day before we recorded the last Bessies, where they were like, yo, Final Fantasy 16, come and get it. Come get your exclusive.
Come and get your Xbox 360 and PS3. That game looks like an MMO.
It looks dope. Wow. It looks tight as hell. You're out of your mind. Yeah.
I still, I mean, this is wild. The heat of the Bethesda announcement was absolutely 100% not a question time to build demand for the pre-orders. Absolutely not a question. The wild thing to me about that is like, when will there be a Bethesda Xbox exclusive game? I mean, like, not for a while, right?
I think next year.
What game do you think that's going to be?
It might not be Skyrim. It might not be Elder Scrolls or Starfield.
It certainly will not be either of those
games.
Yeah,
that's fine. But they, I mean,
were you, you planning on Wet 2?
I mean, they have a lot of studios, y'all. Like,
yeah, and two of those games are going to PS5.
They didn't just buy Bethesda Game Studios, which is a developer.
They bought eight studios.
They bought Bethesda.
Yeah.
Right. They bought ZeniMax,
Arcane,
right?
And id Software.
Both Arcanes.
And, yeah, both Arcanes.
Right.
And,
yeah.
Yeah,
no, they have a ton of stuff. I mean, I think you're right that they'll have, there's the Arcane Leon game that is going to PS5 first, Deathloop.
That looks rad, yeah. But they revealed finally like what the actual hook of that like Groundhog's Day hook of that game during, I think, the PlayStation 5 press conference. That game looks fucking cool as hell. I am very excited about that.
Yeah.
And then you got Ghostwire Tokyo, I guess, coming next year, supposedly.
Yeah.
That is, I think that's the new...
is that Tango?
Tango.
So,
yeah. Tango.
Yeah. And now everybody's wondering, what's Microsoft going to buy next? You know, Sega tweeted, I guess, earlier this month, a photo of Sonic sitting next to two neon green milkshakes and fizzies or whatever they are. And people are like, oh, here it comes. They have to be eyeballing at least one Japanese studio.
You could give them very little money, because that will not sell consoles.
Because Microsoft's like foothold in Japan is so... It's still like pretty limited compared to Sony's, and honestly compared to Sega's, that for them to acquire, this is, I mean, it feels pretty deep in the rumor mill, but that would be wild.
It's a wild, if you think about this pick. Okay, so this is a question for you guys. First question, will Microsoft, as the owner of Bethesda, will Microsoft make Bethesda games Xbox, all Bethesda games Xbox exclusive?
I think no.
I mean, they're not, because they'll
be on PC. They have been what?
They have been, well, yeah, it'll be PC, but they
okay, sorry, not PlayStation. I should,
they
feel like
I don't know about PlayStation, but the thing that has gotten me really excited about Microsoft in this the past couple of years is their willingness to kind of not be so possessive, I mm-hmm. guess, of their stuff. The just this week, there was also a pretty great Nintendo Switch Nintendo Direct last week. Where they announced a new Monster Hunter game. Yes, I do. I do want that. But they also just like surprise released the second Ori game on Switch, which is a Microsoft game like joint. So both of those are on there. Cuphead is on there. So like, I don't know. I feel like that is an exciting trend.
I think that, but to me, if I try to imagine, I mean, I can't think of another third party where, if they decide to keep them Xbox, any of these, you got Doom, Dishonored, Wolfenstein,
Elder Scrolls,
Starfield. Fallout, Starfield,
Rage,
Rage, Rogue Warrior. I mean, we can all have some fun if we want, but like, I mean, that's devastating. I mean, I can't think of...
Yeah, I think they're going to come out. So I think...
Even as a timed exclusive.
Think of it like Netflix, right? Like, you can go to Target and you can buy a House of Cards on DVD. You'll embarrass yourself, but you can go and do it. Like, that's... Yeah. It'll
Target
be the same thing.
Target people will laugh
like,
at you.
You. These games are going to come out on Game Pass, presumably first. You'll pay like $10 a month to get all these games. But if you want to go and spend $70 to buy the game on PlayStation, and it will probably have less features, I'm going to assume that they're going to optimize it for Xbox and PC. That option is going to be available.
I don't
because why
know
not?
That.
Like, it's free money.
I disagree, actually.
Yeah?
So specifically when it comes to games like Fallout, like Elder Scrolls, games that are literally system sellers that people buy consoles for, I do not think the financial benefit that Microsoft would get for selling those games even a year after release would measure up to the mindshare benefit of, hey, you cannot play Fallout or you cannot play Elder Scrolls on a PlayStation. That is a huge, huge advantage to discourage people from getting a PlayStation versus an Xbox.
Or and I think that that will happen. I agree with you in theory. I, however, would be surprised if they care about this at all. Part of the thing with Bethesda is a relationship with their fans, sure. Right? These are like long dialogues. If I'm Todd Howard, I'm not gonna, there is some part of me that's like, I mean, money is money is money, but like, I am gonna get a guarantee that like these people who have been with me for 20 years are not gonna be like left in the cold and unable to buy the games. Like, it just seems, it seems wild to me, even as a timed like, I feel like what
I'm just thinking, like, you don't want to mess with Howard. That
if Todd Howard leaves Bethesda, though,
when he had that hot mic at E3 and he was like cursing some dude out because he was so pissed, Todd Howard is an intimidating dude.
Yeah,
he's fucking scary. He made a bunch of great games and he's kind of the Wizard of Oz basically. So no, but I mean, my bet is, for, we're just pulling this out of our asses, I say time exclusive. I feel like play it first on Xbox for 3 months, they get all the juice, and then later they'll pick up, because they still want the money, right? Like, they would love the money that you would spend on Fallout and Elder Scrolls and all that stuff.
If you look at the decisions that Microsoft has made and like the different studio acquisitions they've made in the last like 4 years, as them trying to win back the console wars, as like reductive a term as that is, I think them spending $7.5 billion with a B dollars on this like monolith of game development that contains all of these different studios that make all these like pretty great games, I mean that's such an enormous shot across the bow. Like, I don't think that these games are going to come out on PlayStation.
Question 5. For y'all, a question for y'all before we wrap this section, what is Name the publisher that you think Microsoft could still purchase that would be the kind of like coup de grace. This is the like, oh, this is the megaton. Obviously, it can't be Nintendo. It can't be Sony. But what is there a publisher left that you're like, that's the power play?
I mean, let's name the big publishers. It's Ubisoft. It's EA. It's... Yeah. I mean, I don't see
Capcom, like, if they really did go for like Sega and Capcom to like finally find purchase in the soil of like Japanese game players. Like that would be to force those people to say like, now you if you want to play Monster Hunter, now you fucking have to buy our Xbox. Like that would be like pretty huge on a sort of global scale.
I would not be surprised if you see one of the two. I think it makes more sense for Sony at this point to buy Konami and announce it with a Metal Gear Solid in development by Kojima.
Konami doesn't make games anymore.
Yeah, they make. Yeah, I don't.
Is it, guys, come on.
They make pachinko machines.
Do
I'm
I have to
saying.
Literally explain this to you?
Please.
Konami is a game publisher in name only at this point that does own the rights to the Metal Gear franchise. That would be all they're buying. It's Konami.
Buy out their
it's
game
Metal
division.
Gear. It's Kojima.
Yeah.
We own it all now, and we're buying that in like fucking Boktai. Yeah.
Do they get
know.
The pachinko machines
Rock
as well, though?
What?
Do they get the
pachinko machine? No, they'll split it off into a separate division. I mean, it's like Konami doesn't want to be in that business anymore. I think Capcom makes a lot of sense.
I think Capcom is the one that makes the most sense to me because I think at the end of the day, what they're looking for is properties too, right? Like,
right.
That's the appeal of Bethesda. Not only do you get all of the talented studios, but you get a ton of big names. Mm-hmm. And with Capcom, you get Resident Evil, you get Monster Hunter, like you said, Griffin, you get Street Fighter and Mega Man. I mean, you get some really iconic games. I know a lot of people don't like this Microsoft acquisition, and I myself am not a huge fan of giant corporate consolidation because it usually does a number on creativity. I will say this, though, in terms of hypocrisy, it was a little weird on social media seeing people who are pissed about this, who are always like, I love it. Last of Us. Sony, they're really pulling away with this generation. Look at their hot exclusives. And then Microsoft's like, yeah, we have exclusives too. And they're like, yeah, but you can't do it that way. You have to do it the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wild. It's exciting.
Real quick, round the horn, pre-orders. What'd you get? Or what didn't you get? I'll start. I managed to secure a PlayStation 5 from Amazon at midnight the Tuesday and completely miss Xbox pre-orders. Don't care. It has no games.
Don't want to burst your bubble because Justin hooked me up with that tip. He texted me at 11 p.m. my time. He was like, hey, get that Amazon PS5. And I managed to do it. The disc drive full version because I want to watch all my great Blu-ray cassettes. Did get an email.
Yep.
The next day saying, hey, just so you know, you might not receive this item on the day it's released due to high demand. And I like, does that mean I'm not going to get it until January or a week later? Like, I would love to a little bit of clarification on that, Amazon, but they have not afforded me as much. And I was like,
yeah, I was in the middle of a huge depressive episode when I got that. And that was just like the fucking nail in the coffin for me. It was the one speck of light I was looking forward to in my existence. And they really took the wind out of my sails.
I was driving for like 15 minutes when the Xbox pre-orders went up, which is of course a span of time where they sold out like literally instantly. So didn't get one of them.
Plant?
Nothing.
Yeah. I got an Xbox Series X. I was at a drive-in watching Jaws when the PlayStation pre-orders went live, so that didn't happen.
I was trying to get one for Fresh. We failed.
Will there be another run of... I mean, do we feel like this is not it for the calendar yet, right? We'll have another run.
Yeah, so I think there will be more for both consoles. I think they're being a little conservative because they're not entirely sure how many they can produce.
Right.
So as the weeks go by, I think there will be more opening. It is interesting, though, because Microsoft tweeted this morning saying, hey, essentially, we're not going to have any more ourselves, but check with other retailers and they might have more. So if you bought one at Microsoft.com, that's probably going to be it for Microsoft.com until launch. But I think with PS5 and Xbox, there will be other opportunities. I don't know. Follow Wario64. People seem to like him, and he's making a shitload of money on referrals.
Oh, my gosh.
So yeah. Good for him.
Yeah. Y'all, let's hop into some questions really quick.
Okay.
Because I know we want to wrap. We'll do these kind of rapid fire. This is from Mushroom Boy on Twitter. Farthest each of you have made it into the game level-wise?
Splunky.
Splunky, too.
I mean, the furthest I've made it is with Russ, I think, to, again, without spoiling things, like maybe the fourth or fifth level, pretty far. I think probably the penultimate level right before the
yeah,
right, yes, okay,
the world right before the quote final boss, but not
yeah, I have not gotten anywhere close to that by myself, so
yeah. I've made it to the quote final boss.
Justin?
I've made it to the fourth level of the second world several times, but that's about it.
I've made it to after the final boss. I won't say more than that, but there's stuff that's after.
From Christina, I'm jumping into Spelunky 2 without ever touching Spelunky 1. Is this a mistake?
No.
No. It's a godsend. It's a miracle.
Yeah, that is the thing, because there are very, very slight, subtle changes between the two. Like, just as a simple example, the snake hitbox, like where you can jump on a snake versus not, is like maybe a millimeter off from Spelunky 1, and that took me like the longest time to like rewire my brain. So no, you're totally fine. This is definitely the best of them. So enjoy it.
Yeah. One final thought from a listener from Neutral Jump Hotel. This isn't a question, but I'd love you guys if you guys talked about how wonderful the caveman is in Spelunky 2. My going theory for why I like him so much is that he feels like the only entity in Spelunky who is less capable than me. I agree with that. And the caveman has been tweaked in this version in two ways. Now the caveman can pick up objects. Yeah. So if you throw down like a key that you need or a pet for health, the caveman will pick it up. Also, the caveman can trip over gold now, which can really cause some problems for you when you think you're about to jump on him.
Yeah, it's. I also, just as like a little detail, if two cavemen happen to walk into one another, sometimes they'll start talking to one another in like random caveman speak, and it is just the cutest goddamn thing. It's so great.
Until you jump on their heads and sacrifice them for...
trying to break their necks.
Yeah.
I love seeing a caveman. Like, I'll jump down and just all of a sudden see the caveman holding my dog. And he's just walking back and forth holding my dog, like, so proud of himself.
I want to just, before we wrap... That was the last question, right, Plant?
Yeah.
Just, like, a quick recommendation for people that are listening. In my opinion, the best way to play Spelunky is to treat it almost like a poker game, which is to say, find, like, three or four friends... And don't look online in terms of like what you're supposed to be doing, and just share experiences between one another in addition to like playing multiplayer together. Figuring this game out, because everything is like presented to you, but it's like can be a little bit subtle. Figuring this game out on your own is an amazing, amazing experience. I had a moment in the shower 2 weeks ago, not to get a little blue, but I was in the shower and a realization came to me where I was like, wait, if I try this in this exact spot, what's going to happen? And I like sent it out to the number of people I was playing with, and everyone was all excited, and pulling that off and then seeing it actually do the thing that I thought it was going to do was like a mind-blowing, super fucking cool moment. So if you can play it like that, that's really how I'd recommend it.
Anybody else been playing anything else that we want to talk about real quick?
I've got a game I want to talk about really quick. I've been playing this game called Rivals, which is on itch.io and on Steam. And Griffin, I think you especially will really enjoy this. Actually, I think all of you will. It is a video game made for fans of Wilco, an alt country that is Obra Dinn-esque, in that you're effectively given a collection of like posters and cassette tapes and vinyl records. And you play the role of this woman who is writing the, I guess, biography of one of the band members, and you have to go through all of this information to figure out the order of the chapters. So like the gameplay itself isn't super dynamic. I mean, you're effectively just organizing a whole bunch of possible chapters, but it forces you to go through and really, really learn this fictional band's history by like reading about them, by reading interview transcripts, and by listening to like some pretty damn good alt country songs. It's really, really, really charming.
I'll play anything that is like similar to Obra Dinn. That is still a genre that I wish would.
Yeah,
be.
That like that detective genre of piecing together information is super cool.
I've been playing 3D All Stars, the Super Mario 3D All Stars, a bit, and I feel so mixed about it because so little has been done, like virtually nothing has been done to these games to like make them feel like a, you know, special package, aside from the fact that there's three of them in one thing. And I played like, I don't know, I got like 35 stars in 64 before like that. Like a lot of N64 games, it is so hard to go back to it because the camera controls are just not very good. And Sunshine has never clicked for me. I find that game to be sitting. I think it feels good, and I think like the water pack stuff is fun, but like the hub world is so obtuse, and it's like very tough to just like find what you're supposed to be doing to like find the next level. And of course, Galaxy's great. We talked about Galaxy during our 2007 block, but Galaxy. I have a Switch Lite, and I play everything on the Switch Lite. And when you play in handheld mode, you have to use the touchscreen for things, which is like, whatever, you don't have to worry so much about the star bits because it's easy enough to drag your finger over those. But there's certain platforming elements, like those. There are these blue stars that you have to point your thing at, your Joy-Con at, to like latch Mario onto it. And you have to use the touchscreen for those when you're playing in handheld mode, and trying to string that together with the actual buttons is fucking bad. Like, it doesn't feel good at all. And so it's like, it's a great game, and I'm happy to have it on my handheld, but if that, sometimes I run into things where it's like, that feels bad. That's not good at all.
I'll tell you what feels good is talking about video games, and we're going to talk about another one next week. Here comes the name of it.
It's called Hades.
Hades. So go play a bunch of Hades. We're going to talk about it next week.
It's out on Switch now. It just hit 1.0. It's fucking great.
It's on Steam as well.
It's fucking great. It's such a treat. You can follow and listen for free to our show on Spotify. You can follow us at The Besties Pod, which is also where you find a link to join our mailing list. You can email us, mail@besties.fan. Or send the link to our show, besties.fan. Just tell people to listen to it. We really appreciate it. But that is going to do it for us for this week. So until next time, be sure to join us again next week for The Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
It's a Spotify original podcast in association with Vox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter and produced by Ben Hosley. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!